Imagine a world where schools as we know them don't exist. No standardized curriculum, no rigid schedules, no high-stakes testing. Instead, students take control of their own education, learning at their own pace and in their own way. Sounds radical? Well, it might be closer to reality than you think. Stay tuned for episode 27 of the season with Goodbye Department of Education, Hello Decentralized Schools. Welcome back to the Traveling Principal Show. I'm Joe Clausi, your guide through this journey through education reform, innovation, and sometimes disruption. Today, we're diving into decentralized education systems because we're trying to figure out what's going to happen now that the Department of Education is no longer. We've all grown up in a world where schools are controlled by the state and federal policies, centralized curriculums, standardized curriculums, and top-down decision-making as well. But what if students, families, and communities had the power to design their own learning experiences? Would education improve, or would it become more chaotic? In this episode, we'll cover what decentralized education actually is, the pros and cons, who wins and loses, case studies of schools and movements making it work, the role of technology in AI and in making education more accessible, and my take on where this could go and how it could truly replace traditional schools. So whether you're an educator, a parent, or just someone who's passionate about the future of learning, this one's for you. Buckle up, because we're about to rethink education as we know it. Okay, so to start, let's begin with what the basics are about exactly what decentralized education is. At its core, decentralized education means shifting control away from centralized authorities, of course, like the federal government or state education departments, and giving more power to local communities, parents, and even students themselves, which I really feel like is one of the major benefits. So there are several types of decentralized education models, and let's list them now. It's not all of them. I'm sure I may be missing one or two, but these are the most popular ones. Homeschooling, where parents take full control over their child's education, a growing movement we spoke about in last week's episode. Micro schools, small community-driven schools with flexible curriculum. I may be honored with one of the leaders of a micro school in the next couple of episodes here up in San Francisco area. I would be stoked if we can get her on the show, so we'll see how that goes. Unschooling, students learn based on their own interests with no set curriculum. This is an interesting one. I would assume that this is similar to a setting like an open classroom, if you ever heard of those types of settings. Charter schools, publicly funded but independently operated schools. I love them. I worked at them for a number of years. It is the way. Democratic schools, students vote on school policies and curriculum. I came across this one briefly. I do have an example of this one. We'll talk about it quick. I'm not really too sure about this, but this is an interesting one nonetheless. And then self-directed learning centers. So these are co-working spaces for student learning with like a mentorship opportunity that goes along with it. And I really like this. I have a couple of cool examples about this, and we'll get into it in the show. Okay, so some historical context as well, right? So now that we know what some of the different ones are, where did it come from? Well, back in 1971, one of the earliest voices for decentralized education was Ivan Illich, who wrote Deschooling Society. Now, his point was very interesting. He argued that traditional schools create this dependency that learning should be natural, self-directed, and community-based. But Illich introduced this idea of what's called learning webs, where students would connect directly with mentorships, professionals, hands-on experiences, instead of sitting in the classroom all day long. And so fast forward to today, online learning platforms like Khan Academy, right? Coursera, OutSchool, Lambda School. They're all proving that there is this version of education that, you know, Ehrlich was way ahead of his time because it is successful if implemented correctly. Pros and cons. Let's think about those for a second here as well, because I am stoked on anything that is innovative and different in education, but I definitely want to be realistic. So let's talk about the pros of decentralized education. So no more one-size-fits-all pacing. I love that. Students are able to move at their own speed, focus on their strengths and interests. Homeschooling families use competency-based models where students don't move on until they master a concept. And I do like that, right? There's a lot of flexibility here, no rigid bell schedules. Micro schools and unschooling families often have this flexible daily structure that include real-world activities such as coding, gardening, or entrepreneurship. And I love that. I love that about school. I love that about the learning process, and I do think that that is absolutely necessary. Real-world learning and community involvement is another huge pro of this movement. So many decentralized models focus on this project-based learning approach, and you know how I feel about that if you've been listening to this show. So micro-schools might spend half of the day outdoors or working on meaningful community projects in addition to the other half working on some sort of curriculum. And so, or out of a book. And so not to say that what they did in the morning wasn't curriculum as well. And I guess that's the point behind this, right? And another one is this encourages innovation and critical thinking. Critical thinking is usually one of the four C's, right? I can't think of all four of them off the top of my head, but I know that critical thinking, communication are two of them. And you know, this encourages that completely here, right? Traditional schools focus on compliance, whereas a decentralized model will promote creativity, problem solving, adaptability. Graduates from these types of schools often become more entrepreneurs and innovators, and you can see why. The cons. So now that we know what's good about it, let's talk about what might make us hesitant to adopt it in our own area. Decentralization often favors families with resources, time, and money, okay? And that's equity and access. What happens to students who rely on public schools for free meals or special education services? Should government fund decentralized education to ensure equal access? We now know that they're not going to. And so that's going to be an issue, right? The state may have that opportunity on a state level, and they may. But I'm not too sure what to say about that. That's why I'm reaching out and seeing if we can get an expert in this field who is running a micro school. And if she can, I'm going to ask her about these pros and cons, and I know that she'll be able to shed some light on it. Public schools have assessments to ensure students are actually learning, right? And decentralized models, not so much. How do we prevent gaps in education? In that regard, usually the answer has been historically this, you know, overarching model, one size fits all. And so there's a lack of standardization and therefore accountability as well with these types of situations. But I would put a mark on maybe employment post-graduation as what's really the end goal here, instead of these tests that somebody else gets to make and then we're all forced to try to figure out how to adhere to somehow. So Just some food for thought there, where a lack of standardization and accountability would exist, but you guys know how I feel about that overall. And so, you know, I don't really think our accountability measurements were too beneficial. So let's go to the next point. Socialization concerns. So without daily peer interaction, do decentralized learners miss out on like teamwork and communication skills? Collaboration, another one of your four C's. And I'm sure we'll think of the fourth one here somewhere. But some argue that homeschooling groups and micro schools offer plenty of socialization, and it's a valid concern. So let's bring that up when we get our expert in here. Scalability issues. So most decentralized models work in a small community or families. So could this actually replace public education for millions of students? Right. Put this in an inner city. How many of these would exist? What is the population size? I know that there's some arguments made that 650 is the max for a high school, grades 9 through 12. 450 is the absolute lowest you should go. And anything less than that, it starts to change the culture and the expectations of that school drastically. It's something weird about that number. I did work at a school that was at 150. I worked at a school that was 250. And in they were unique settings. We knew all of those students. I did hear a common complaint that was too small. Surrounded by these gigantic traditional settings, and maybe that's why, I'm not too sure, but just something to think about there. Okay, so I promised you guys some examples. Here they are. The Prentice schools in Arizona, USA, micro schools exist in that setting where students set their own learning paths. So they're outperforming the traditional schools in reading and math already there, and that's pretty gnarly, right? So you can't say it's not working. That's kind of interesting. Another example, Sudbury Valley School sets no curriculum, no grades. Students direct their own education and vote on school policies. So there's your democratic setting, right? Like I don't know. I wouldn't know how to organize that. That makes me kind of sweat. Online learning and alternative credentialing programs, platforms like Khan Academy, Coursera, we named a couple others before, but offer skill-based education without traditional degrees. And I like that. I know that some schools use Renaissance, and there's some larger ones out there as well. Finland's education model is something that I do think we are going to dive into a little further, because I'm going to continue to break this down. Decentralized elements, including flexible curriculums, no standardized testing, and project-based learning throughout their schools. You know, Finland is usually leading the globe in education. And so you can't say that this model doesn't work, okay? I really want this to be something that people are starting to understand. It is different. It's radical. I'm not saying that it's not, but what I need us to start to wrap our heads around while the dogs bark in the background is that there are other ways that this has been done correctly. And I do think that looking at this long enough, knowing what our capabilities are as a country, we have to wonder if we tried some of these other methods and actually supported them to see where they would go, what could happen? I'm very curious to see. So you guys, is decentralized education the future? Maybe not entirely, but hybrid models will likely be the next evolution. I'm not against them. I have to say that if I was to weigh in completely here, I'm very curious. You can't say that they haven't worked. We looked at a couple of different examples in the U.S. and outside that show that they do. Is decentralized education the future? I mean, education savings accounts, such as giving parents public funds to use for alternative education models, has been a growing trend in the U.S. AI and adaptive learning, personalized AI tutors, making decentralized learning more effective. I do this in my own house. I do this all day. I do this with my kids, right? And then there's these digital credentials, where future students may build digital learning profiles instead of relying on traditional diplomas. And I love that. I love it. It puts the path back in the hands of the student and alleviates so much red tape and cost. Let's not forget the cost, right? So what do you think is decentralized education for you? Do you think that decentralized education is the future? Or should we focus on improving traditional schools? Drop a comment, you guys, because I got a couple about this. These are the most popular episodes that I've put out since I've been making the show. So I'm just going to keep harping on it. If you guys want to hear anything about it at all, if you want to jump on the show with me and talk about this, you are on. Here's your discussion question so you can prep yourself. Would you consider decentralized education for your child? Why or why not? What's your biggest concern about decentralized education? If you could design your own learning experience, what would you like it to look like? And last one, do you think we should have gotten rid of this Department of Education or not? Next time, we're diving into school funding. Where did the money go? Holy cow. And why do some schools thrive while others do not and they struggle? So be sure to subscribe, follow, and share this episode of the Traveling Principal Show. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Travel Show.
The Traveling Principal Show.
Principal. Okay, start all over.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you for listening to the Travel Principal Show.
Perfect.